This is the Championship Rounds with your host, Matthew Amayo.
All right, guys, we got somebody on the line, somebody returning from a previous episode from last year. For those who don't know, he is one of your top sources for Black Twitter. He is also a Prince aficionado, and not to mention a John Jones fan. So, hey, Ryan, welcome back to the Championship Rounds.
What's up?
You like that intro?
Oh, yeah, man.
I thought you'd appreciate the intro.
Nah, that's top tier. I think you covered all the bases.
All right, perfect. So top source for Black Twitter, Prince aficionado, John Jones fan. All right, guys. We're going to get down to the nitty-gritty. I anticipated this to be a fairly simple UFC 232 breakdown emanating from Las Vegas, Nevada. Well, the event is, not the actual podcast itself. But I thought it was going to be a simple preview. We were going to get down to breakdowns and predictions, breaking down the main event between John Bones Jones and the Mauler, Alexander Gustafsson, for the UFC, the undisputed UFC Light Heavyweight Championship of the World. And we're at a loss for words right now within the past 5 or 6 days because news came out last weekend that John Jones tested. Well, this is the brief background on what exactly transpired and what has happened in the world of MMA. John Jones has tested positive for a substance in the state of Nevada that he was originally suspended for last year and has since then served his time and served his punishment to the point where he can return. Unfortunately, the Nevada State Athletic Commission didn't see it that way. Therefore, Dana White, Jeff Nowitzki, USADA decided to, well, they weren't in cahoots. Well, we'll get to that later. Have since then moved the fight from the Fabulous Forum in Inglewood, California, much to the dismay of the general public and much of the UFC roster. So, Ryan, tell me what you got. Once again, we're off the cuff, so tell me what you got to think about with everything that has taken place right now.
I mean, it's kind of this thing with Jones where every time he's about to fight, you're just kind of holding your breath. And I think that, I mean, with any UFC event, especially one of this magnitude, especially with a matchup and a headliner of this magnitude, you always end up just kind of like waiting until the moment that they actually step into the octagon to say, all right, this fight is happening. So when that news broke, I wasn't shocked because this shit has happened before, and especially within the context of John's career, this is pretty much par of the course, as sad as that is to say. That being said, there with him specifically, to be this kind of gray area. So as much as I can understand an argument where it's easy to say this guy pissed dirty, he's a cheater, I'm done with him. In this case, I mean, theoretically it makes sense. I can understand him having very, 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 very trace amounts of a substance in his system, especially when you consider the kind he originally tested for and how that whole ordeal played out, because remember his B sample came back and it was clean. So it's just a weird sort of deal, and at the same time it's kind of like, oh well, shit has happened again, what else is new?
Well, the shit has happened again, but here's where we start asking ourselves a shitload of questions, a whole bunch of different questions. So we're going to ask ourselves, was this re-ingested? Was this just trace amounts from those bootleg Viagras? What is it exactly? You know, that's what we're trying to figure out. That's what we're asking ourselves. That's why John Jones is still that enigmatic figure in our sport that we want to see him succeed so bad. And I'm seeing him turning into this figure. This is going to be a pretty trash comparison. Okay, so bear with me. I see this as a comparison where this is why I had you on the line, Ryan. This is why I had you on another episode. Why I wanted you on another episode of the Championship Browns, because pretty much now you're my go-to John Jones guy. The reason why, because you are realistic in the actions that he does, and you manage to be impartial most of the time. Sometimes, you know, you ride for John Jones. You ride and die for John Jones, no matter what he says to DC, what he says to the general public, what he says to the press. You ride for that guy. And he's starting to, in my opinion, in my mind, he's starting to form into this Kanye West level, where Kanye does have these fans where no matter what he may do wrong on a moral level, people seem to gravitate and ride for Kanye West. Once again, that's a piss poor comparison. That's just
actually
kind of what I see.
That's,
in my end.
Nah, I think that's actually apropos, man. I think that's a good comparison, and I'll tell you why. Because I was kind of the same way with Kanye West for a long time. Mm-hmm. I viewed his actions through the lens of somebody that was misunderstood, somebody that struggled to communicate himself intelligently or articulate himself in a way that made sense. And he has a long list of just antics and shit that he's done that that people have kind of, you know, it'll rub the average person the wrong way. So the first kind of thing where you're like, where he's, you know, going off on George Bush during Hurricane Katrina, that's enough for some people to, like, kind of wipe their hands of him. And then the Taylor Swift thing, and they're like, nah, this guy's an asshole. And you view, when I viewed those things through a certain sort of lens, and I'm like, all right, this guy's just misunderstood. It got to the point this year with the Trump shit where I'm like, nah, that's a wrap. Like, I'm done. I'm done with Kanye West. And that's just been it. I've just kind of wiped my hands of that and moved on. And I think with John Jones, I can understand people reaching that point where, again, you have these gray area things where you talk about, like, all of the major fights of his career, the first DC fight, and then he fails a test for cocaine or whatever it was. And then we kind of view that fight through a certain lens. Like, all right, he beat him. It was coke. Like, yeah, he probably partied the weekend before. Coke is not going to affect his performance, you know, unless he did it right before the fight. It's not going to change the outcome of that performance. So, yeah, we can say he beat Cormier fair and square the first time. And then he pops for Turbinol after the second fight. But even with the second fight, you know, you have this clip of Jones saying, hey, Daniel, you have this tendency before the fight, you have this tendency to like dipping your head to the left.
Exactly.
When I throw this feint. And I'm picking up on that, and I'm gonna kick your head off.
Kick you in the head, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And Cormier saying, ah, yeah, you picked up on that tendency, but that's not going to happen. And then the fight playing out that way. So then you ask yourself the question, did he really need to, was he cheating? Like, it just doesn't strike me as a guy that needs to cheat.
Bro, so that's what makes this whole thing just interesting. Because there are signs, there are signs to where it kind of, in my opinion, gets just a little bit sketchy. The reason being because he's a top guy, and I've seen the argument with other people in numerous other MMA outlets, whether it be podcasts or websites or whatever the medium may be. It just seems that he's the only top guy popping, okay? He's the only guy pissing hot for anything, the only top guy. I don't know if you want to attribute it to like some sort of race issue or, you know, or something like that, or if you want to attribute it to just his reputation. And he's even gone as far as pulling the card as saying, you know, the reason being for me acting out this way is because I'm an underprivileged black kid growing up, and I wanted to be popular. I was always not invited to parties in high school. I've never really, you know, invited to this. I was shunned, this and that. And as I grew up, I felt like I still had that need to be popular and to fit in. That's why I party so hard. That's why I pop those pills. That's why I fucking snort lines of coke during a fight camp and all that. And he's pulled that card.
Yeah, and to an extent, yeah. I can kind of, not to cut you off, but I can kind of see that. I'm not shooting him some bail, but I think the point that I was headed towards is that it's less about the cheating per se. It's his attitude mm-hmm. about the entire situation. I mean, you watch the press conference that just happened. And you have a reporter that's asking legitimate questions. Why are we still having conversations about John Jones and cheating 2 years after the fact? And why are we moving an entire?
Are you talking about Ariel? Are you talking about Ariel Helwani?
No, not even. Who asked that? There's a young lady. I don't know her name. I think she's a Swedish reporter.
Is she the one that got booed? She got booed out of the door.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. She's the one that. You know, he's like booing her and saying, like, take the mic from her. Why is she asking this question?
He pulled a camera.
He just, exactly. And he just, he lacks self-awareness. He's just a very deluded individual. He, you know, even in the interview with Ariel after the fact, you know, Ariel is saying, hey, how do you feel about the UFC, you know, picking up this entire event and moving it from one location to the other, another location just for you? And, you know, his answer was along the lines of, well, you know, the UFC isn't really an organization that kind of favors one person. And I literally had to, like, stop the interview because I was dying from laughter. I mean, that just shows a complete and total lack of, you know, not only self-awareness, but it's just like, dude, are you paying attention? Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, like, you name it, the UFC has made their money off of building their entire organization around favoring one person. Mm-hmm. So, it, you know, it's stuff like that. It's those type of comments where anybody that has any kind of criticism of Jones is a hater, or they just want to see him fail. And he just lacks the ability to kind of like accept that criticism for what it is and say, hey, yeah, I know it's screwy that I fucking failed a drug test for a picogram of, you know, whatever, such and such, yada, yada, tish, tish. And instead of just kind of rolling with that stuff, he kind of folds under that. And you just kind of see that petulance and that kind of like childishness about him. So I think that Kanye West comparison is kind of spot on, because when you criticize Kanye West, he does the same thing. Everything is, you know, you want to see me fail. People don't, you know, people are picking on me. People are bullying me. People don't love me. Yada, yada, tish, tish. And it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of in that same category. So I could definitely understand that.
Yeah, here's the thing with John and me. As far as you laughing at what he said, just trying to brush it off with everything being moved over to the state of California, being under that commission, he's completely cognizant of what he's doing and as far as what ramifications can take place as far as the state income tax. Fighters who might not make as much as him being taxed at a high amount compared to what Vegas has, which is zero. Am I correct?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he's cognizant of what he's doing. And it's blatant preferential treatment. And he knows that. But the thing is, Dana White
I don't think he does. Because remember, this is the same guy that when you think about the Henderson fight, he was supposed to fight Henderson. Henderson gets hurt. They want to throw Chael in there last minute. And he says, nah. And Dana White rips him a new ad. This guy is an event ruiner. So it's not like Jones is used to getting that type of preferential treatment, especially when it comes to Dana White. Dana White has you know, been on record many times, and I know that's not worth shit because his word isn't like, I mean, we're not talking about an upstanding, you know, honorable guy here, but
that's true.
He, you know, he's been on record as saying, like, I don't trust John Jones. I don't trust John Jones to be the main event of a card. It's going to be a long time before I let him headline a card. He has to earn back that trust. So it's not as though Jones has kind of spent his entire career, you know, being coddled or being baby. I mean, he actually, in the grand scheme of things, he's probably taken some of the hardest licks just in terms of, you know, fighter punishment and fighter repercussions that the UFC has handed down. So I just think that, you know, in this case, I could totally see him not being really cognizant or really understanding that he is getting, you know, a shitload of preferential treatment in this case. And I think, you know, really what it boils down to is the UFC doesn't want to lose the money on the event. You know, they're not doing as well as they were doing during the Rousey, you know, McGregor peaks. And that's well documented. So I think it's the fourth quarter. It's the end of the year. This is the last major event of the, you know, of the year for them. And they just absolutely refuse to take that L. And, you know, it's something that I would not be shocked if he legitimately thought, like, hey, you know, this is just an unfortunate situation. And it's something that I, quote unquote, I'll have to battle through, as he so eloquently put in his interview with Helwani. It's just, I can see this guy not quite understanding or having the social nuance to kind of see the big picture and even question whether some different things are going on.
And you made great points. Everything you said was valid, because the more I look at it and when I listen to you, yeah, he's gotten burned. He's gotten burned by commissions. He's gotten burned by Dana. I just think that the preferential treatment is coming from, as far as the card being, you know, it's hanging by a thread. Because if you look at what's going on in the lay of the land of 205, we got John Jones, right? Okay, DC leaves. He's the heavyweight champion. Knocks out Miocic, okay? And you got Gus. Two guys coming off of very, very lengthy layoffs. Gus, I think his last fight was against Glover Teixeira. And then Jones' last fight was against DC, obviously, where he won and got stripped. And then who do we got after that? Anthony Smith? Who the fuck is that guy? He has a couple wins, you know, beats Rashad, beats whoever. You know, he's a rising star in 205, but he's still fairly young. Ilir Latifi, Volkan Ozdemir, who we've seen get a title shot before. So in respect to what you said, to build off of that, 205 is just straight trash.
Yeah, 1,000%.
So you don't know where we're going with this. And if John does win, what can happen is he could go up to heavyweight, but I don't really think that him and DC both make their claim on the reasons to not fight each other, because John's reason is he's already whooped his ass twice. He decisioned him and dominated him the first fight, head kicked him when he called it, head kicked him and then beat him. And then next thing you know, DC moves up to heavyweight, becomes a true champion. And then what's really telling it, John, and he knows that DC has earned his way to the heavyweight championship, because when he said that DC won the light heavyweight championship, John said that didn't really count for him. That's not right. Me counting DC as a champion. But when he beat Stipe, hey, that's all him, because he started out as a heavyweight originally in Strikeforce. Right. So the lay of the land at 205 is just straight garbage. And Dana, acknowledging this, is like, oh shit, we got to do something. We got to do. And here's the thing with Nevada also. The Nevada State Athletic Commission, you know me, I don't really trust no commission, especially the state of Nevada.
Nor should you.
Yeah, exactly. With a history of just
everything.
Everything. So moving this to California and having Jeff Nowitzki involved, who was the former head honcho over there at USADA, is now one of the UFC's guys. And then, yeah. So now California's going to license John Jones.
How convenient is that?
How fucking convenient is that?
Yeah.
It's very, very convenient. And when I first read it, I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. This is really happening to the same guy. And what attributing to what you said earlier, you really gotta hold your breath. You can't really hold your breath even before the fight. You gotta hold your breath afterwards, too.
Yeah, nah, 1000%, you know? especially with him. And it's just sad, man. You know, I was kind of thinking about it, and, you know, I don't know so much that, and I guess, like, the issue with kind of being able to see the nuance in all of these situations is that then you start to question is, well, am I being biased? I don't think it's me being a big Jones fan that I want to believe that this guy is not intentionally cheating. I think it's just that it's exhausting at this point. It's tiring that to have all of these guys and have all of these issues where, you know, even Anderson Silva, who, you know, is considered to be one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest of all time, one of my favorite fighters, for him to have, you know, drug testing issues, it's just like, you know, what is next? Can we have a guy where it's just not, you know, this is not an issue? It never comes up. It's not on anybody, you know, not on his track record at all. And we have some of those guys, but it just seems like the people that are truly transcendent, the Silvas, the Joneses, the guys that we watch them and say, we'll never see another guy like that. It's sad, man, that we have these issues and we have to kind of just take that into account. You know, when they come up on a car, it just sucks. It's just exhausting.
But here's the thing. This is why I have you on, because even if you were biased, I didn't really give a fuck. If you were biased, that's why I got you on.
Yeah,
that's why I got you on last year. That's why I got you on right now, because you're a John Jones guy, and I don't mind that, because I'm a John Jones guy too. It's just I probably got sicker of it faster than you did. So that's just me. And do you think, my question to you is, him testing hot in the state of Nevada for Turinabol, which is what, a picogram, right? Okay, so it's tiny amount. In like comparing that to like an Olympic sized swimming pool, which is I think the analogy that DC used.
Yeah.
Do you think this was something that was re-ingested, that something that he took again, or do you think this is still tiny trace amounts for John prior to him serving his time?
I am not a scientist. I have no idea, no earthly idea how any of that works. I have no choice, and that is basically the point, and that's kind of how the UFC is able to get away with this, is that we really have no choice but to take the quote-unquote scientists at their word. So if they say that this specific metabolite, as Jones put in his interview with, said in his interview with Helwani, this specific metabolite can live in your system for 7 years, then, you know, I have no choice but to kind of just take that at face value. Now, I can question it and be skeptical. And my first question is, well, if this specific metabolite can stay in somebody's system for 7 years, and that's, you know, scientific fact, and we kind of know that, then why are we talking about it showing up in his test? We know that he tested positive for it 2 years ago. We know that this has been in his system. We know that metabolite exists in his system. So theoretically, if he can live for 7 years, then it's going to show up for at least the next 5 years that he's in competition. So why are we having a conversation about it? So, you know, it's hard to say. Yeah, I think he re-ingested it, because I'm still of the opinion that this isn't a guy that needed to cheat. I don't think he looked at Daniel Cormier and said, I need to take something to beat this guy. I don't think that has been the case over the course of his career. This is a man with remarkable physical gifts. especially for the sport that he's in. I mean, there's nobody, well, with the exception of Alexander Gustafsson, of course, but there really isn't anybody that physically can match up with him. There's not anybody with as
unless he were to step up to heavyweight. Aside from Gus, he's not going to get any competition anywhere close to to DC or Gus unless he steps up to heavyweight.
Right, and I think even at heavyweight, I mean, you can have guys that will physically match up with him and might be stronger than him, but he's just a unique athlete when you consider his length, how he moves, how he uses his body, the nature of his offensive attack. So it's hard for me to wrap my mind around him looking at all of those things and saying, oh yeah, on top of that, I'm gonna dope because I need another edge. I need to make sure that, you know, I beat every single person I come across. He just doesn't strike me as that type of guy. It just doesn't make sense to me.
And I'm on the same boat as you as far as him having the God-given talent to beat anybody in the world, arguably, in 205, at heavyweight, whoever, okay? And here's the thing with you saying you're not a scientist, because I'm not a scientist either. Dana White's not a scientist. The general public's not a scientist. Errol Helwani or whoever reputable MMA journalist is not a scientist. And we like to think of PEDs in generalities. We don't know exactly what it can do to your body. We just know that it's something bad and it's something banned. And Turanabol is one of those things. Like, we hear that drug all the damn time. You know, it's an estrogen blocker. Why would someone take an estrogen blocker? Oh, it's because, once again, this is us speaking in generalities of what these drugs do. So when people say, oh, what's he doing taking estrogen blockers? That's supposed to mask or hide whatever he took he took prior, you know?
Right.
And I believe John wholeheartedly when he says, I don't need to dope. I don't need to take this to gain a competitive advantage, especially against a guy like DC. Because if you look at it, the tail of the tape, attributes, looking at that in depth, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that he outmatches DC in every way, from the height to length to speed to all of that. Right. And it's just really, really unfortunate that the stigma is growing and growing each and every single year that we talk about this, that we talk about John Jones. Because do I think, okay, let's get to predictions now. Because do I think he could beat Gus? Hell yeah, I think he could beat Gus, okay? I think he beats him inside four rounds. I think he has a little bit of tough time just because of the layoff. Yeah. And I think Gus is training really, really hard and he's motivated to beat a guy that he thinks is cheating. You know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, as far as the fight itself, I'm expecting, you know, I have really good expectations for the fight, even if I'm not picking a winner outright, and I am, I'm going to pick Jones because nobody has beat this man yet. So,
of course,
you know, there's no feasible reason for me to say, I think this is the one where he gets got. And it's somebody that he's fought before. They're both coming off long layoffs. I think they've both gotten better as fighters. So I just think it'll be, you know, they'll pick right up from where the first fight left off. I think it'll be incredibly evenly matched. But I just think that Jones is one of those fighters where he will find a way to finish the fight or win the fight. So, you know, this happening does provide like another element of the fight. Again, I watched the post press interviews with Errol Helwani from both fighters. interesting to note that Gus seemed irritated. He seemed kind of pissed off, but he seemed pretty clear-headed. He seemed like he was focused, like he was ready. He was extremely pumped for this fight. You know, they talked about the fact that the UFC knew for 3 days that Jones had the atypical test, quote-unquote, and, you know, he's finding out via social media, and they didn't contact him, and they, you know, they talked about him, like, talking to his management about how they were going to proceed, because, you know, basically the UFC, again, is saying, hey, I know y'all made all this, these arrangements, and I know, you know, y'all had all these plans for fighting in Las Vegas, but we're fighting in California. If you want to fight, show up. If not, you know, more power to you. And just kind of sticking it to, you know, the lower tier guys. And even the headliners, and even Gus was like, you know, yeah, this is costing me a lot of money.
It's disheartening, dude. It's really disheartening. Sorry
it sucks. No, it super sucks. And, you know, he was looking at, you know, they briefly considered the possibility of not fighting. And if I was in his position, I probably would have said, yo, UFC, I need you to cover this expense. We need to look at some shit in my contract, or this fight's not happening. And if they'd have said, well, we're not doing that, then I'd have said, all right, cool. Like, holler at me when y'all get this shit figured out.
Yeah.
But, you know, just showing the fact that he was willing to say, you know what? Fuck all that. Like, I'm stepping in. I want this fight right now. I've been training. Just shows how prepared he is for this fight. On the flip side, the Jones interview, he seemed kind of out of it. He seemed mentally exhausted. He seemed kind of rattled. He almost sounded drunk, to be honest with you. If you go back and watch it, he's just kind of all over the place. He's not making a whole lot of sense. He just seemed out of it. He didn't seem like somebody that was, he just seemed kind of shell-shocked, and, you know, that could be from, you know, just the exhaustion of thinking, oh shit, this fight's not happening, oh, it is gonna happen, like, you know, now I gotta wear all of this stigma of being a cheater, or, you know, it could be like the guilt is weighing on him, you know, who knows, but I think that's gonna play a small part in this fight. I don't know, you know, today is Thursday, the fight's happening Saturday, you know, a lot could change in 48 hours, so, you know, it may be one of those things where he's just had a long day, and he's like, I'm over it today, but, you know, it's something to watch. It's definitely a different element going into this fight before. I think, you know, if it winds up that Gus is victorious, I think people will go back and look at their demeanors prior to the fight and everything that's led up to it and say, yeah, that played a major part.
Bro, I stopped watching interviews and press conferences since Mayweather McGregor. I think it's just with everybody getting no, I'm honest, dude. I'm so honest. I don't even watch that shit no more. Like, the only thing I care about is the fight. Like, when people say to me, hey, did you watch this and that? Did you watch, you know, whatever? You know, sometimes I do, because I feel obligated to report it on this medium, on the Champions Grounds. And people are like, hey, did you watch the media? Like, I'll only watch something if it's like an occasional shove. If somebody shoves somebody, I'm still a sucker for that.
Yeah, no, I'm tuning in for that.
Yeah, I'm tuning in for the shove or the bitch slap or whatever it is.
It just depends, man. If it's something like this, of this if it's something like that, or if it's something of this magnitude where, you know, you have this kind of a storyline, or you have a, you know, McGregor-Habib storyline. Like, yeah, I want to see what everybody has.
Yeah,
has
dude, I'm a sucker for a shove, but I've been so turned off by just pre-fight hype since Mayweather McGregor. Like, I didn't want to hear that shit. That shit was orchestrated, and I 1,000%. I didn't want none of that bullshit. But here's where I predict Gus' mindset's at. Yeah, as what you said, you think he's pretty prepared, mentally strong, and he's ready to take on the fight, because he could have just said, "Fuck all this. I'm not fighting that shit. I'm not fighting for that shit. I'm not fighting John Jones, who's popped on numerous occasions. I'm not fighting California, where the income tax is at a significantly higher level." You know, he could have said fuck all that, but he didn't. He's fighting. He's stepping up to the plate. The thing is with Gus is, I feel like he has an obligation now to himself and to the public and to the rest of the people on the card. Gus feels like he's some sort of social justice warrior now, where he feels that he has to prove it to everybody, and he's carrying that on his back. He's the knight in shining armor. He's the guy to defeat the bad guy. He's the good guy in all this. He's the face. John Jones is the heel. And I feel like unfairly he put that upon on himself. And I absolutely think he should not have done that, because that just adds more pressure to Gus. Because I'd be lying if I said that there are people who are not going to be rooting for Alexander Gustafsson. There's people going to be rooting for Alexander Gustafsson. That's just how it is, especially when we see John Jones and his transgressions going through his whatever demons he might have, being as young as he is, which I still think he's relatively young at the age of, what, 31, 32?
Yeah, 30, no, 1,000%, 1,000%.
Gus is putting that on himself, because I'm not dissing anybody in the lower half of the card, anywhere from the main and the co-main below. I'm not dissing nobody, because we got guys on the card who, quite frankly, and the UFC has done this to themselves. And we hear this every single year, because how many times do we hear about a fighter going broke? Like, at least once or twice every single year we hear about a fighter going broke. Either I'll play devil's advocate and they mismanage their money, or they just don't get paid enough. Because you got to pay your trainers, you got to pay yourself, you got to pay your team, you got to pay whoever. And you only get such a small share of what the UFC has to give you compared to what they're paying other guys. So, you know, all this, all respect to people on the card. You know, if we're looking at a guy like, I'm not saying Corey Anderson's a journeyman, but he's a great fighter in his own right. You know, he's more of like a gatekeeper type guy in 205.
Yeah.
I understand where his gripe is. I understand why he was so passionate and fiery in his response to the news on Twitter, because I retweeted it and I agreed with him. I'm like, bro, you don't get paid shit, and I know that.
His response was especially funny, because he made point to say, like, two or three times, like, yo, I'm not mad, but yada 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 yada. Like, you sound a little peeved, my guy. Like,
I don't blame him. It's okay, bro,
to admit that you're upset.
I don't blame him. Mad. He's fighting Ilir Latifi.
This is bullshit.
Latifi, a guy who is pretty fucking dangerous, who's got dynamite in his hands, who could finish a fight whenever. Yeah. He's fighting a guy putting his life on the line. Next thing you know, I got to fight in fucking California for scraps? Are you kidding me, man? I got to fight for scraps? So Gus put that on himself, man. He might not say it out loud. You know, he's not going to. If you ask him, you're like, do you feel like you're the knight in shining armor to save the day and beat, you know, the UFC and MMA Superman? Do you feel that? If you were to ask him that, he's probably going to say no. I'm like, no, I just want the belt. But no, deep down, he feels that he wants the title, and he wants the title of being, you know, the hero.
Absolutely, you know? And I bet every fighter is walking up to him saying, hey, kick his ass. So that pressure is just kind of, even if he wasn't putting it on himself, I think it would just kind of, it's kind of palpable. It's just kind of there where everybody's looking at him like, yo, do that shit. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely an interesting element added to that fight, for sure.
Yes. And if I were to, you know, just to wrap things up here, if this fight took place a year after it happened, the first fight happened, hey, this would be a way more intriguing fight. But I just think that with Jones, just the guy that he is, just being so talented and just physically gifted. And Gus, yeah, he's equally just as gifted as well. And, you know, he took John Jones to the limit. He pushed him to the limit. So if this fight happened maybe a year after the original fight happened, we'd be talking about a different prediction. But I just think that John has this one.
Yeah, man. You know, John always kind of scares me coming back from long layoffs. And he's had quite a few of them. It's always weird watching him kind of reacclimate himself to the octagon. In this case, him having been off a year, 2 years, or whatever it is, I think it was a year he fought in 2017, right? Yeah. So with that considered, and the fact that Gus fought around the same time that year, I think, you know, that kind of washes itself out. I think they will both kind of be, I think they'll both kind of, you know, spend the first round just kind of reacclimating themselves to the environment and getting a feel for the fight. So, you know, again, I don't have any reason to pick against Jones, because there's not been anybody that has beaten him yet. And I'm on record as saying I thought Gustafson won the first fight, and I'm still sticking to that. I watched that fight live. I watched it back several times. I still think that Gustafson.
I'm surprised hearing that from you.
I think Gustafson did enough in those first two or three rounds, stuffing where he kind of picked it out. Yeah, I mean, and so I mean, I could see him winning feasibly,
of course.
But you know, Jones is just different, man. He's just a different guy, and he showed in that fight that when his back's against the wall, he's not just gonna take the L. He's not just gonna lay down. He's gonna take his lumps. He's gonna roll back, and he's gonna dish out some more punishment. And so, you know, I'm just gonna roll with that being the status quo until, you know, it's proven different.
Exactly. And I completely agree with everything you just said. I think that the first fight, I think Gus did enough to win, but in my eyes, I think he didn't do enough to dethrone the champion, because I think the comeback was just too good, was just too rich, it was just perfect. It was the perfect
comeback. Yeah, completely fair. Yeah, exactly. Completely fair. I'm not saying that Jones shouldn't have won. There's definitely an argument for it. But when I watched that fight live, I thought for sure that Gustafson was going to walk away with it. And I was kind of surprised that they awarded Jones. But again, he battled back, man. He does what champions do. And, you know, he kind of solidified himself in that moment as being, you know,
the greatest ever.
Exactly. So it'll be fun, man. It'll be fun. Hey, yo, I know this isn't on topic. Cyborg Amanda Nunes.
I know, I was about to bring that up. I was about to say, hey, Ryan, we're about to wrap it up. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that are UFC 232 related and one other thing that's not related to UFC 232. But I was about to get to that point. It's going to be crazy.
Somebody might die.
I don't know about that. I think I just think the magnitude and just the spectacle of seeing, you know, both, you know, this quite possibly could be the biggest women's mixed martial arts fight of all time. And nobody's talking about it because of Jon Jones. But when we're looking at it.
1,000%. I completely forgot that fight was on this card. Until this week. And
I don't think somebody's going to die. I think if somebody dies, it's Nunes, but I don't think she's going to die lightly. I think just the size advantage is too insurmountable, and I think that Cyborg just grapples her to death and just imposes her will and imposes her strength on Nunes.
Man, I don't know, man.
That's my prediction right there. That's my prediction. I got Cyborg, I think, by like a fourth-round finish, submission or knockout. That's me.
I don't think it goes two rounds. I think Cyborg is going to win.
Yeah.
I don't think it goes two rounds because Nunes is definitely going out on her sword. I don't think she has any interest in being grappled at all. I don't think Cyborg is going to even get the opportunity to get her hands on her like that. I think they're going to come out blasting. And it's just a matter of how many can
48 hours away from this.
Yeah, man, it's gonna be nuts. I'm infinitely more hyped for that fight than I am for the main event.
Rightfully so. One last question. This is gonna be not related to MMA, not related to combat sports, not related to sports in general. I've kind of have an idea, but I just want to hear from you once again, and to all the people listening. Album of the year. What's album of the year? You gotta tell me.
Hey, yo. It's close. It's a lot closer than it was in maybe May or June. It's close for me. And I'm not saying this because he passed away. Rest in peace, Mac Miller. Swimming's a spectacular album. It's perfection. It's a masterpiece. Okay. Victory Lap is album of the year. Hustle Victory Lap is album of the year. If you don't agree, And then go jump off a bridge or some shit, man.
Okay,
like,
I'm jumping off that bridge partially because I think it's top two, top three. Because my top three is we got Victory Lap. We got, I know you always say that Redemption is a close second, and we got Daytona. Okay, I'm gonna go with Redemption why I say Redemption is album of the year, because not only that record. Okay, King's Dead aside, I just think that J-Rock had some sort of renaissance because people have always slept on J-Rock for the history of TDE, the history of Black Hippie with Ab Soul, Kendrick, and Q. Soul to me has consistently been like my favorite guy out of the four. And I think that J-Rock, well, probably where I'm from, where I lived, I felt that J-Rock kind of got disrespected. And I've always respected J-Rock and admired his work.
Yeah, no, 1,000%. His 90059 was a spectacular album. Yeah, that album didn't get the respect it deserves. I think Redemption is definitely in the conversation. I am going to reject Daytona only because there are SpongeBob episodes that are longer than Daytona. I can't give it the true props of being album of the year at 20 minutes. It's great music. It's just not enough of it for me. So I'm a traditionalist in that sense. Like,
me too.
Me too. You gotta have some body to it. You gotta have give me 40 minutes, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I just, Daytona's great. Like I ran the shit out of Daytona. I still listen to it. It's still a great album to listen to on my way to work. It takes me about 30 minutes to get to work. I can listen to Daytona, you know, if I'm in traffic, I can listen to it twice. It's a great album. I've heard it several times. It's just I can't put it over Victory Lap. I can't put it over Swimming. I don't put it over Redemption. And even Anderson .Paak's latest is up there for me.
When I heard the first time, okay. What's your boy's name on Twitter? Bansky. That's your boy. Okay. Like sometimes I agree with his takes. He's just a troll and he knows it. And he's cognizant that he's a troll too. And he doesn't care if his shit's right or wrong. He's just like you said, he's just there to fucking piss people off. And
Vance is a sharp guy, man. Don't dismiss him as a troll.
I'm not dismissing him at all. But I think he's cognizant that he thinks he's a troll. I think he knows that he's a troll personally, because he wouldn't be doing what he's doing. You know, as far as he gets paid for doing this shit. You know, he gets paid.
I think he has some interesting perspectives. I think that he's just not afraid to put those perspectives out there. I think he trolls a little bit with the basketball shit. He likes needling Westbrook fans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kobe fans. But I just think that he's a guy with a different perspective and a different opinion. And like that just happens to piss people off because he doesn't say it in a nice way. He just states it matter-of-factly. Yeah. He doesn't think that Victory Lap is album of the year. And that's fine. Like, fuck out of here, dude. It is. That's my boy.
I think Oxnard's a great album. I think Oxnard's a great album. I think Malibu's a great album. I think Anderson .Paak overall is a tremendous artist. But I think we got those people who are like the demographic that Bansky attributes to, that demographic that rides for Anderson .Paak, that cult-like following. I think it's great music. It's just you won't necessarily see me bumping that on a daily basis.
And that's fair. It's just like Freddie Gibbs put out two really, really great projects this year.
I think he set the bar too high with Pinata because Pinata stole my shit.
Pinata is like third or fourth on the list for me. Pinata is very, very good. It's just that one for me, it was just like, it was a step away. He has some shit that's just like, I mean, I like Shadow of a Doubt more than I like Pinata.
Yes.
Yeah, he's spectacular. I saw him live a couple of weeks ago and for the second time, and it was even better than the first time. He's a tremendous act.
Beautiful.
So there's some guys, man. But yeah, Victory Lap, still number one.
there you have it. We're going to wrap it up before this starts, you know, before listeners who listen to this podcast think, like, what the fuck is this shit talking about hip hop? What the hell? You know, so before we get carried away with our debate, hey, Ryan, I want to thank you once again. You're one of your top sources for Black Twitter. For those who don't know, Prince aficionado and an overall just a John Jones fan. Hey, Ryan, I want to wish you a good night, but appreciate you hopping on the Championship Browns and talking with me, man.
We'll hey, thanks for having me anytime, man. Happy New Year. Hey, hope you had a good Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, we'll definitely chop it up after the fight. And, yeah, I'll holler at y'all. Hey, follow me, RyanPrime_. We out here, gang, gang.
There you go. Hey, this episode might come out tonight or it might come out tomorrow, but odds are tomorrow because my girl wants to watch Bird Box. So, so this might come out tomorrow. It'll come out in a timely manner before UFC 232. So you and also listeners, none of y'all panic because this episode will come out on a timely manner, all right?
That's real.
All right. Have a good night, bro.
All right, you too, man. All right.